Second half, Brian Austin Green's back on the show. Director Nick Leisure as well. Funny, funny show. And we'll get into the news as well. First, there's Geico. Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
The Adam Carolla Show presents Brian Austin Green's birthday cocktail party for July 15th. Let's see who's invited. We welcome Dutch painter Rembrandt. Next up, NFLer turned actor Alex Karras. Let's welcome the woman who wrote I'm in the Mood for Love and The Way You Look Tonight, Dorothy Fields. From Airwolf, Jan Michael Vincent. Linda Ronstadt is here, plane crash survivor and drummer for Leonard Skinnerd, Artemis Pyle. Ariana Huffington is here. So is Jesse Ventura, Joe Satriani, supermodel Kim Alexis, Forrest Whitaker. From Zapped, Willie Ames, Howard Stern's wife, Beth Ostrowski, and carrying a Jell-O salad. From Ambrosia, David Pack. Brian Austin Green is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Always good to see Brian again.
Yes, indeed, my friend. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. It strikes me, of course, everyone knows his work from all those, a decade on Beverly Hills 90210, which I never missed an episode of.
Right, I did.
I totally. Liked it.
Totally
watched it.
That was your jam, I could tell.
I liked it. It was ironic, from an ironic way, but I never missed an episode.
Nice.
And, of course, the movie Last the Night, which is available on VOD, which Brian plays a very different character than what you'd expect him to be playing, or maybe that you may know him of it,
yes,
from his work.
Yeah,
in the
not
past.
The nicest guy.
No, but very good and heavy.
Thank you.
Role.
Have you seen it?
I just watched a trailer before I came in.
Oh, hey, good. Thank you.
I will watch the entire movie when I get back.
When I have time.
Brian is a Valley guy. Grew up in the Valley, right?
Grew up in the Valley. You went to school with my sister. We've talked about this a million times, but I figured since Jan Michael Vincent was here, which is like I'm super stoked on, we should bring up some other past stuff. So you went to school with my sister.
Yeah, Lori.
Lorelai, yeah.
Was she your half-sister,
half-sister,
step-sister?
Yeah. Half-sister from my mom's previous marriage.
So I was talking to these guys on Friday, which is Lori, or Lorelai, we just know her as Lori, was the hot chick at school. You had to have, you had to declare a hot chick.
Yeah.
There was a big deal. Mm. It wasn't, you didn't get a scepter or a crown. It's just everyone knew.
It's weird.
Well, we've learned now. I mean, now scepters and crowns are given to everyone.
But true, you're right. Everyone sort of coalesced around, oh, that's the hot chick. And there was no debate whether she was the hottest or not.
It was agreed upon, and it was understood.
And you'd compare your hot chick to other schools, like, oh, our hot chick's hotter than that hot chick.
She was the hot chick at Colfax Elementary, who I'm guessing you guys just grew up on the other side of.
No, we grew
Colfax.
Up at, we grew up Hesby and, where is that?
Now Valley Village.
Yeah,
known.
Totally. It's Valley Village.
I grew up on Houston Street. And I was right across the street from Colfax, and then Lori or Lorelai carried the mantle of hot chick into Walter Reed Junior High.
Nice. Yeah, that's where you made it.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you're carrying the scepter from one school to the next.
Yeah, I'm sure she was recruited by many junior highs. As, you know, once you're the hot chick,
she was drafted
like a young LeBron James, like a young hot LeBron James. Then she carried that into. Now I was not in the running for the hot chick boyfriend department, so we didn't have a lot of interactions. I just recognized her.
Ray had a lot of abs. Did he get close?
No, he was considered more animal than man.
That I understand.
Back then. And then at some point, I think we all ended up at North Hollywood High, and I think she lost her mantle as the hot chick of North Hollywood High.
That. That's so disappointing.
It's like winning regionals when you go to the Olympics.
Yeah. See, I held her on such a high mantle until hearing that news just
was
now.
Was she exceptionally good looking, or did she, or do you recall, or
no,
is that
she
too creepy?
Was. She's exceptionally good looking, but it is weird anyway. But I think it just went with the time. I mean, that was what, the 80s at that point.
70s, late 70s, 80s. So you grew up in the Valley.
Yeah, yeah.
When, how did acting come about?
I went to school at a performing arts school on the USC campus.
Wow.
Yeah, so I used to take the bus every morning to school. And one of the kids that I rode the bus with, he was acting. He was doing commercials. And he always had toys. He always had all the cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And this was the 80s, and I was like, what are you, like, rich? How do you have all these video games? And he was like, oh, no, I do commercials and stuff, and my parents, you know, give me a little bit of money from each one. I was like, I want to do this. It sounds awesome. So I went, and I met with his agent and started working. And just got to the point in work where it was like I couldn't do anything else because I was so steadily working. I was so busy.
They were running this scam off the USC campus.
Yeah. So it was the school that I went to was a elementary school across from the Shrine Auditorium.
Oh, wow.
On the USC campus. And student directors from from Ultimate Fighting, from USC would come over and pick kids for student films.
Oh, wow.
That campus is still there, right? It's called...
I have no idea.
Okay, because
Brian went to USC,
but so. I did like some community outreach stuff with kids over there, tutoring or whatever. But it's
sure
like right across from the shore. Right. I really did. It wasn't you.
So was it when you're a kid actor? Is it about the look, or is it about just being able to like memorize the shit and hit the mark
and being agreeable? Probably.
Yeah. Like, is there a lot of technique involved?
No, it was
you're doing a Pop-Tarts commercial,
was,
right?
Right, I did, which I actually did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, sure.
There you go. Yeah, I remember you working
right.
there.
Right. Yeah, totally. It's all coming
it's
back
brought
to
up
you now.
In film school, quite
he did
often.
Frosted
Cocoa
Cherry
Krispies.
Through s'mores.
Yeah, got to have my pops. I did all that stuff. No, back then there was such a small pool of kid actors that everybody knew everybody, and there was no competition because everybody sort of filled their own lane. It was myself. It was like Seth Green. So it was like, okay, they either want like a little redhead kid, and so Seth Green's going to get it, or I'm going to book it. So it was like you had this small group of kids, and everybody was just like sort of figuring out the way commercials would be booked and what you had to do.
You say small pool of actors. I always say this, you know, back in the day, a little before Brian's time, but there were like eight guys who played bikers. And they would pop up in every sitcom, every Clint Eastwood, Any Which Way But Loose. It was just like the bald guy, fat guy, bearded guy show up. You turn on Sanford and Son, that they needed bikers at a bar. That dude, and that dude. It was like there were professional bikers. There were seven dudes. They worked more than Marlon Brando. They worked in every film and everything.
Look at like Danny Trejo's career. I mean, that dude is literally, he just like completely, he owns that lane that he's
type,
in. And so if people want that, it's like, that's your go-to guy. And he's probably done more than Marlon Brando.
But there was sort of that way with the kid actors, and now there's a million kid actors and a million guys who could play bikers. Is that? And we don't want to see the same guy from the sitcom on the theatrical thing because it'll bump us or something.
That's the toughest thing is with streaming and everything that's available now is so many shows don't want anybody recognizable for parts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, well, I mean, I can't help that. I mean, I started acting when I was 9, but, you know, so.
Yeah, well, you have to, I mean, maybe, well, first off, I was thinking how Quentin Tarantino's kind of helped this genre of taking actors that we know from other roles. I mean, famously, Travolta and can't think of his name.
Luke.
Luke, right? Yeah. Yes, yeah. Just taking
Robert Forster going to Pam Grier.
Well, it's kind of a weird thing. It's like there's some conceit of like, well, you did this really successful show a long time ago, so you can't act. It's like, well, maybe you can act better because the guys you're hiring weren't even acting when you were acting and memorizing scripts and hitting marks and stuff like that. So then there's this thing where it's like, oh, I don't want to see that guy that I recognize from this Aaron Spelling thing and this great movie. And then, but at a certain point, I feel like it's turning. It's kind of like, I keep waiting for Molly Ringwald to do a huge movie. Like, she has chops.
Yeah.
She can do it. You know what I mean? I knew she's a North Hollywood gal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hartsook.
Was she on Hartsook?
She was on Hartsook.
That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I hope.
Well,
I hope you're on to something. I hope you are rewriting the wheel.
We have a Coco Krispies commercial from 1987.
Oh, hey, nice. Yeah. Fantastic. I sure hope it's me because hey, I was. Oh, yeah. Oh, look at that good looking guy.
All right.
Yes.
Deep chocolatey Coco. Did you see me?
Sure. A whole box full of Coco Krispies.
Seth Green's at home.
As I was saying, as we were talking about, it wasn't really about acting ability at this point. It was you either fit the look or you don't.
Right. I buy you as a young child.
Were you following the little green tennis ball?
So you should buy. I was following X's on the table. So
got it.
This way, you got to think that was before any sort of computer generated anything was done.
Right.
So it was, they had X's on things and you'd look and pretend to talk and then they would afterwards draw.
It wasn't green screen. They drew that in.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't, it's, the game has totally changed since then.
If
anybody's looking to hire someone for something like that, I'm your guy.
Rabbit shit right there.
Yeah, I'm your guy.
So now there were not so many channels and everyone watched the same Saturday morning cartoons.
Right.
So were you recognized by your peers on the bus or anywhere, the schoolyard or anywhere
was,
else?
But I was given a lot of crap. I was, because I had done like the Coco Krispies commercial and I did Pop-Tarts and I did like 75 commercials. So like just walking down the hall, people, I was like 5'4" for most of my young life. And everybody gave me a hard time about all the commercials that I did.
Was that money all just put aside?
It was. My parents were really great with it. So by the time I was 17 and 90210 was really happening, I bought my first house with money from cartoons.
At 17?
Yeah. I couldn't even legally do it. So I moved into it before I turned 18 and legally could. It was under my parents' name, and then they signed it over to my name at the point when I turned 18.
Well, wow, they're like the gold standard of parent for that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I think Tony Hawk did the same thing from skating.
Oh, really?
But yeah, it's interesting.
Have you been to his house? He's such a nice guy.
He is the nicest guy.
He's such a good guy.
So was that a house in the valley?
It was Burbank.
In Burbank?
Yeah. It was right over here. It was at Naomi and Clark.
Gina's looking for a house, so make her vomit by telling her how much you paid for that house, which is now $1.9 million.
Before you do, I'm looking at just modest, maybe a Craftsman, maybe if I can afford it. And I'm talking two-bedroom, two-bathroom. They don't even bother coming in with an offer if you don't have 1.7.
Right, yeah. No, see, that was my house. It was a two-bedroom. It was this tiny – looks exactly the same. A friend of mine took a picture out front of it because he used to hang out with me at it, and it looks exactly the same. Same paint colors, same plants, everything. I think it was like $275.
I'll take 8 of them.
So get this. My parents' house, they still live in Valley Village. Their house, when they bought it, $35,000.
Oh, yeah. My God.
And it's now appraised for like $1.7.
Yeah. They're on the good side of Magnolia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're right. They're half a block away from the small side of the park.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was picturing that's where you guys live. So I lived on the other side, and the house I grew up in was $10,000.
Goddamn.
I mean, that was in the 50s. My grandma bought it, but $10,000.
There are pictures of my parents' house when it was built. It was built by a Disney production house or something. It was built in like 4 days. Crazy. And the original pictures of it, you see the house with a well out front and nothing around it. Just like field all the way.
So built in the 20s or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Did you, living on your own, having your own money and being 17, yeah. sounds like a lot of partying was going on.
Yes, oh, there was. Yeah.
And that's absolutely. Thus your friends would congregate, right?
Yeah.
Because they didn't have their own space.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there's a lot of banging you're dead of their on girlfriends so far. And ripping really, bong loads.
You're really painting quite a picture of my childhood.
I lived it. Now, I lived a low rent, pardon the pun, or pun intended, version of that, which is I was the first dude to move out and get an apartment in North Hollywood at Seago in Laurel Canyon.
Yeah.
And I had that, and everybody came to the apartment who wanted to have sex with their girlfriend and or do drugs.
I didn't have – my house wasn't necessarily used as a sex cave because my sister ended up living with me for a few years.
The hottie?
Yes, mm-hmm. the hottie. And I think it was because my mom was like, "I just keep an eye on him."
Smart.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because your sister's like eight,
she's
9 years,
9 years older,
9 years older than you. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Would have been the grade, I would say.
But we had a lot of parties, a lot of drinking, a lot of – I mean, you know, it was unbelievable that I owned a home at that point. So
when did 90210 kick in then?
1990 to 2000.
So you were how old in 90?
I was 17.
Oh, so it just came – yeah, just right on the – yeah. Heels of all the Pop-Tart commercials.
Right, exactly.
Were the only teenager playing a teenager on that show?
I was – Tori and I were the same age. Uh-huh. Everybody else was a year older and up.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Jeez, I wonder how she got that gig.
She had to be a lot of qualified candidates.
May never know.
Was Aaron Spelling around?
He was around, yes.
Was he – what kind of – I don't know what kind of dude he was other than
– super nice guy.
Really?
Yeah, super good guy. Like very – I mean businessman, smart with all of that, obviously like $47 million house. So he was doing okay for himself. But just a really nice guy. I could always reach him on the phone if I needed something, which I don't know what I was calling him for. But I was calling him just to feel awesome. Like, oh, yeah, I'm calling Aaron Spelling.
Yeah, he was – I mean, there were a handful of guys. There was like Quinn Martin, Aaron Spelling, Sherwood Schwartz.
Oh, sure.
There's a couple of – oh, God, the guy passed Stephen
– Cannell.
Yeah, yeah, Cannell.
Stephen J. Cannell.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these guys would be like one guy responsible for 28 shows that were currently on the air.
Yeah.
And it'd just be like, how do you spin all these plates?
Oh, Aaron – in his heyday was, I mean, he had The Love Boat. He had Fantasy Island.
Hotel?
He had
all,
yeah, he had crazy shows that were on the air. And then I, from what I heard, I've heard obviously not firsthand. So don't actually hold me to this. But what I've heard is that he was kind of at the point with our show of, I'm going to do another show. If it works, cool. If not, I'm done. I've made enough TV shows. I'm good. And then 90210 blew up and it was sort of the rebirth of his career. He did our show. He did Melrose Place. He did Charmed. He did just a whole slew of shows.
You say it blew up. It's hard. It's impossible to overstate how big that show was. I was in middle school, like seventh grade. It was ubiquitous on cover. It was just the biggest thing for middle school kids, high school kids, I'm sure, or whatever, you know, whatever it was at the time.
I always say the only reason that it blew up the way that it did and worked as well as it did was because it was around at that time period. The internet didn't exist. There was no way of fact checking what it is we were doing. So we could say anything. People were like, yeah, man, that Beverly Hills, that's a great area.
It was.
Meanwhile, we were shooting in Van Nuys. I mean, you know, and our high school was Torrance High School. So,
that's great.
But West Beverly was a real school to a lot of people.
It was ubiquitous. It was everywhere. I was just watching Euphoria over the weekend.
That's a tough watch.
Crazy show.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's a great show, but how many Americans would know any of the cast members in whatever the version of 90210 is? Like,
one and
just,
a half.
Yes. It's like, there was just, you were probably amongst the last graduating class of everyone is united on everyone knows everyone from the same show. Mm. And then at some point, we got scattered.
I was going to say, it's 90210 and Friends.
Yeah. No, I'm saying amongst the, not the only, but amongst the last of the that class wave. that was about. Right. That was true. About it.
It's true. I think because the scene of the world changed at that point. I mean, once Friends was on and then the internet came around, people had access to people and things that they didn't have access to before. So a show like ours wouldn't have worked.
Was it insane being stopped every 10 feet?
It was pretty insane. Yeah.
Because again, I mean, like I've talked to Henry Winkler about it. Like, think of Henry Winkler's the Fonz. Right, not only do you get stopped every 2 feet, people want to fight you or want you to bang a girlfriend.
Or they want you to like jump a bunch of cars on your motorcycle.
Yeah, or a shark. But and it's, you know, I think when there's an actor that's maybe 27 playing an 18-year-old, that's one thing. But you're an actual 17-year-old. Like, you've not formed. You're not fully formed.
Your prefrontal cortex.
Mentally.
Yeah, no, it's true.
That could leave a stain.
I mean, it was the first show of its kind. It really, like, there hadn't been any nighttime teen dramas before that. So it was, but it was tough. I mean, growing up on camera during everything, it was weird that things that we were doing on the show, I was doing in real life at the same time. When it was Halloween, it was actually Halloween when we were shooting the episodes and they were airing. Graduation, it was like, I had graduated. It was, everything was sort of the prom. All of the things were things that were really relevant in my life at the time. So it was odd. It was hard to separate, I think, for your own sanity, the work and the character, and then being at home and being a normal person.
What was the vibe with all you do? You'd always hear horror stories, but I didn't get a horror story vibe from your cast.
No, it was, again, it's such a, it was such a unique experience. I mean, it hadn't, before us, to put it in perspective, before our show, New Kids on the Block were huge. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching news footage of them running to their tour bus and a million screaming fans at like chain link fences and then rushing stages and all the stuff and thinking, God, this seems crazy. Cut to That's Us 6 months later. And then New Kids on the Block were done and we had just completely taken the place of that. And I remember being in malls and in situations going, this doesn't make any sense. How did this happen? I was just watching this. Yeah. Like Joey McIntyre was literally just doing what I'm doing now. So it didn't really make any sense for me because of my age. There was a part of me that was like, just sort of took it for granted and didn't really understand it. I'm sure people, cast members that were older were really riding it and they were like, oh, this is amazing, because they'd already been living for 10 years, you know, on their own and sort of struggling and getting through it and having to pay bills.
A decade. I mean, there's another thing. Life is like
box of chocolate.
Don't say a box of chocolate.
No, it's driving to the Bay Area from SoCal, which is the first time you do it, it seems like forever in the car. And then as you do it, it becomes routine, and then at some point, it's fast. Yeah. It's the same distance. It's just in your head. You know, it used to be, you know, when you were younger, if it was this time of the year right now, my kids are talking about going back to school. Christmas was 2 million light years away from right now.
Inconceivable.
And then you get older, it's like, Christmas is coming pretty fast.
Yeah, it's just
tomorrow. Around the corner.
Right.
You're already on Amazon getting, like, you know.
10 years on a show when you're 17 to 27, that's the longest. It's incredible. I mean, you were 7 10 years prior to that. Just would be like this. It must have felt like never ending at the time.
It felt never ending, and then it also it was really deceiving because it felt like I had done a bunch of pilots leading up to that one, but at the point when you're doing a show like that and you're getting these pickups for 2-3 seasons, so you're like, oh, okay, so I've got another 3 years to. You at some point just sort of tune that out, and it's just the way it works. After 10 years, it was like, man, I can't believe I've been here for 10 years. I'm done. Everybody at the network is like, oh, no, let's do one more. And I was like, no, I'm like, I'm burnt out on this. Like, I need to.
I spent all my formative years in front
of
a camera.
I've been here for 10 straight years, from 17 to 27. It's a big deal. Yeah. I need to go.
And
I have an Adam Carolla podcast to do, and I can't, you know.
Can't be late.
Your director of the film, Nick Leisure, we're going to bring in. We'll talk to him about you two and how this came about. So when you left, did you think, well, I'm just going to go? I mean, there must have been offers up the wazoo at that point, or were there?
Offers for, again, that time was strange. What's up, man? Offers for like movie of the weeks.
Uh-huh.
Like
so people were like.
Not for stuff that was really good, because for those things you had to audition for them. and people at that point, after 10 years of the show, casting directors were really sort of in a place of like, oh no, we know what he does. Like he's not right for this.
Right.
So it went from I've been working steady for 10 years to literally every door just being closed. Not even slammed, not in a rude way, but it was a rude awakening for me of like, man, I did this for 9 years before the show, and now I kind of have to start all over again. Like, I need
so
to
you got 19 years of, you know, the process is, I don't know, it's like being a walk-on a college football team. Hey, coach, time me doing the 40 and see how many times I can pump up 220 in the bench press and see how my skills look. So the audition process is like walking on. The coach, after this whole thing, the coach is saying, don't bother trying out for the team.
Right,
and you're like, well, why don't you give me a shot?
Right. And they're like, and they're going, you don't need to bring
we've seen
a
your
uniform
game.
Today.
We saw your
you're
game okay. film.
Right.
We're not
we really need water and stuff like that. Right. So you just stick to that. Like, well, you know.
So it's weird because all you want to do is audition, essentially. And in their minds, like, we've seen all the game footage we need to see on you.
It became this uphill battle of kind of starting over and then reproving myself and proving myself in things in genres that I hadn't really done. I hadn't done any comedy work leading up to that. So I used to go in for auditions for sitcoms, and the feedback we would get was like, was he sick? Like, did he not like it? Because he didn't seem interested in being there. And my manager and my agent kept saying, like, no, that's just his thing. Like, that's how he does it. And it wasn't until all of a sudden I did something and people got to see it that they went, oh, okay. And now I go in for things and kill. Like, they completely get it. But it's that thing of just proving yourself to people, you know, from one genre to the next. And people get so stuck and pigeonholed in one thing that they do that they seem to be really good at. People then assume, oh, that's the genre that you can do. And it's like, well, no, I love comedy, but I also love drama. And I love all of it. Give me a shot at all of it. But,
well, yeah, I was going to say, because speaking of drama, Last the Night, which is Nick, you direct, produced?
Yeah, directed it.
Did you write it?
Yeah. Well, I wrote the original story, and then I had another writing partner, Tom Chilcote, that wrote the actual script with me.
How'd the connection with Brian come out to play?
Through one of my casting agents, actually. So he was, I don't remember exactly
he was
why he
drunk.
Was on the list. I think he probably popped up a media or something like that. And then I was like, yeah, he'd be a good one for this role. So I put him on the list at the top. And my casting director called me and said, hey, Brian, I want you to call him about this. And we talked for, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes about the movie and like 45 minutes about his chicken coops after that. So.
Understandably, because building a chicken coop, as you know, building anything, that's kind of the main focus of life at that point.
You got a chicken coop?
I built a chicken coop. During the pandemic, during the lockdown, I got really heavy into DIY. I built a chicken coop. I built a vegetable garden. I built a treehouse for my kids.
Wow. Do you have chickens?
I do have chickens. Yeah, I have six hens and a rooster.
Wow.
I was saying the whole time, I was literally using treehouse as a metaphor. Like, you could sit home and do day drinking, or you could fucking use this window to go build a treehouse for your kids. Like,
right.
Get busy, get physical, break a sweat, put wood together. Like, it will pull you toward the light.
You know what I had never done until we were stuck at home was I'd never worked with concrete before. Oddly enough, I had tons of remodels done on homes that I was in and things like that. And I've always been one of those, like, you know, they're here at 7 a.m. I'm out there at 7:30 with a cup of coffee, just watching them all day, like watching how they do what it is they do. Right, yeah. The pressure, I'm sure.
Sir, do you have a problem with the way we're pouring this?
Right. That doesn't seem level right there.
Indubitably.
So the driveway was next? Or what?
At the point then when I had a chicken coop at my house. But I live in Malibu and have a horrible ground squirrel problem, which I mean, in the, you know, in the lineup of problems, I guess, to have, that doesn't rank very high.
But it'll steal their
food,
right?
But some people have ground squirrel problems, as I did. So I thought I can either keep patching this chicken coop up that they're in right now, or I can just build something from scratch that is squirrel resistant and squirrel proof. So I did that, and as soon as I put in posts and I like put them in with concrete and they were solid, I was like, oh man, I can build whatever I want. And then all of a sudden you start realizing like, man, I can do all sorts of stuff. I was like building, you know, things at around my house, and I'm now remodeling. My girlfriend bought a townhouse in Oak Park, and so we're remodeling that, and I'm doing a lot of the work myself on that. It's so much fun.
It's even like it kind of transcends fun because it's just like super satisfying.
Oh, it's like, super
and
satisfying.
People don't realize that satisfying is a big feeling that
it
you need
feeds,
to get reacquainted
it feeds
with.
The soul when you do it. It really does. Like I being outside all day doing super laborious things, like just. I built the chicken coop, so now I'm painting all the wood that you'll see white. Mm. But to have it done and then put the script, like, and to open and close the door and be like, man, I built this. Like, this didn't exist until I built it. Is cool.
Yeah, I don't. You building the coops, Nick?
No, I'm not building coops, but I know who to call if you need a driveway or something now.
For a new coop.
you actually had, we were talking about this outside. I remember seeing pictures of a house that you were in, probably not in now. And you had an elevator, like a lift for cars.
Yeah.
And it would bring a car up into your living room.
Yeah, my den.
And
yeah.
I was like, wow. That is like that's the great. Coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was an engineering job because the hoist, I wanted the in-ground hoist, like the old school.
The turntable one, right, that came up.
You could turn it, but like back in the day when I grew up in North Hollywood, this place called Mighty Muffler and another place called Magic Muffler.
All right, yeah.
A lot of
competing muffler shops.
They had those in-ground hoists where these guys go, the single post. It'd be single post would come out of the ground. Now they have these four-post things that are just take up a lot of room and they don't disappear into the ground. So I was like, I want a single post old school hoist, just one tube going up, and I want to put it on a big platform. I want to put a Lamborghini inside of my den.
That's what you had
den.
In the picture. You had a Lamborghini parked in your den.
There's a problem.
Huh.
Resale?
The problem. Lamborghini was sold well, but the post only goes up to about 6'5", because why would it go to 10 feet?
Right.
Why? You're changing the oil. It's just got to be taller than the mechanic who's working on it. So they don't make one, but I was coming up about 4 feet short.
So you had real low ceilings on your bottom floor?
The car went into your living room?
Yeah, but I had to build extenders for the post.
Oh, man.
But I couldn't get it on there. So what I had to do is, first off, this is nuts. Don't ever do this. I had to lift the platform up to about 3.5 feet, put temporary legs on it, drop the post, drop the lift back to the ground, put extenders on the post, reattach them to the platform so I get the extra 3 feet, and then lift it up the rest of the way. But it was
hairy. So did you do the extenders out of, like, steel?
Yeah, a lot of fabricated steel the extenders.
So when it went into your living room, could you actually drive out of that way?
No, it was just on display. It was like having a car like on a showroom floor.
Oh, there's a pic. Chris will find it.
So if it wasn't detailed,
what do you tell the people that would like to buy your house?
Right, he turned a four-bedroom into a one-bedroom that you could park a car in the
garage.
But the bed starts in the basement and comes up to the bedroom.
I built the room it was in, too. That was a big steel construction thing and did all the stupid glass. I never glazed. You never did concrete before. I never did glass
now I'm really
work.
Getting interested.
Wow. I put in all the glass. Yeah, I went nuts. I was crazy.
You were like Tony Stark.
Yeah. Like, but I'll tell you what it is.
Down there with Jarvis.
We'll find, and, yeah. I don't know, Chris will find it. It's got to be somewhere on the internet or something. Sure. But the whole point is bigger picture.
Right. Back to what we were talking
about. I just had this open patch outside my garage. And I was like, I'm going to build a super garage. I'm going to put a super office above it. And I'm going to put a Lamborghini inside of it on a hoist, on a mechanized system. And then
I did. Look at
and
that.
Then I did. I put in all the glass. I made the platform. I put the car in it. I did everything.
Dude, but, you were totally Tony Stark at that
point. But it's in the movie I did, Road Hard. But
that's crazy.
Here's the whole point. Sometimes I'll tell people what I'm planning on doing.
Yeah.
I'll go, I'm going to build a roof deck or something. And they go, how are you going to? I go, I put a fucking Lamborghini inside my house. Right. I do whatever I want.
I can do anything.
I do whatever I want. That's how it works. Is this roof deck more or less than putting a Lamborghini inside your house? Right. Is it, or a chicken coop or something? It's all
what's the next
pales
one?
In comparison.
Like, what's the? How do you one up that?
I don't know.
You don't. You just build bedrooms for your kids.
Olympic size pool
that go up
in
the
kitchen. You just give up on that. That right there is the single guy or the newly married, like, have no other responsibilities. I want to park my bright yellow Lamborghini in the middle of my house.
Out of my young twins.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you have kids and you go, you trade the Lamborghini like a Sprinter.
I built my son a loft bed and my daughter a little raised whatever. But it's not, it's nothing compared to that.
So do you build stuff yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I tell guys how to do it because I know how to do it. But
so the answer to that is no.
Yeah, I will. Yes, I will do things. Okay. Is my answer? Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's the best.
Yeah, I'm like more like the mafia don who has people killed, but I'll kill a guy once in a while if
I'm
he crosses me.
I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty. I'll beat your ass in a bar. I just, I can bring somebody else
in
to
general,
do it.
I call the guys in.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Coffee, so, cake, yeah.
Nick, I feel bad now. We've been talking about
you should feel bad. Why is my
Lambo
microphone the only one that doesn't have a cover on it? I feel like I'm hitting
because
raw
you're not
or
popping
something.
Peas, man.
You have better elocution than we do.
I'm like in here.
Ron.
How many days was the shoot?
We were 16 days.
Was it 16?
Yeah, 16 days.
That's
originally
fast.
We were supposed to be like 18 days, and then we lost the first location, so we had to move to a new school like day one of shooting, which was crazy, but we pulled it off.
Ryan does a lot of shooting at schools. I mean,
I know
that
right?
sounds bad now, school shootings, but it's been, he's been acting in a fake school for a long time.
Well, when I told him about the script,
school.
He
so
was like, I'll only do it if you put it in a school. So I was like, okay.
Yeah.
All right, 90210, here we go.
No, you didn't
all
say
right,
that.
Whatever.
Yes.
So it's you came up with the idea, but then later on somebody did the screenplay for
you. Yeah, so I actually came up with the idea at the first school with a friend of mine who was the principal, and he was just telling me a story about a teacher that was going kind of nuts during the pandemic. And I said, hey, this would be a crazy like film script or a film, movie. And obviously that teacher didn't take it as far as Brian
did.
Yeah,
not going nuts in the sense of like what I did. He wanted to use the facilities to, work out and stuff like that. And the principal was like,
he's kind of losing his mind.
You can't come
back home. And so then I was like, we always see these news stories and things like that about kids losing their mind or, things like that in the school. And so we always look at teachers as somebody we can look up to and like they'll never lose their mind. So I was like, we should just play off of this and see what happens. And
well, I'll tell you, one thing the pandemic has taught us is teachers are fucking nuts.
Yeah.
I didn't know they're as crazy as they were. I didn't look at them as human beings when I was a kid. It's just, that's Mrs. Wolk and Mr. Divi over there. And, I was like, I don't know who these old people are who are here to watch me for 3 years and then I'm leaving. But I didn't really thought of them as, I didn't know any of their first names.
Yeah. No, they seemed like little, like superheroes. Like I have with my kids now, I'm super active in their school and I've had that exact conversation with their teachers who are my age of like, man, when I was a kid in school, teachers were like the highest level of everything. And now it's so weird to like be out at a party or a bar or something. And a teacher's there like hanging out.
Yeah. There's no way. I ran into Teacher Doris at a supermarket with my mom. It's like, Doris. What are you doing here? It's like, shopping. For what?
Right.
Food.
It's weird to see them out of their element. Pencil yeah.
In the class, you eat chalk, right? No. Like, it's so weird just to see them.
It's like seeing an animal at the zoo out on the street, like outside yes. of the cage. Like, and you're like, wait, but I've only seen you ever
like
at the zoo.
Seeing a zebra yeah, just walk down the street. Right, totally. I was such a shit student. I was back in like Philadelphia when I ran into Teacher Doris. I was like in kindergarten or something. I wasn't even in the first grade or maybe in the first grade. And when I saw Teacher Doris, I was 6 and a half. I was like, oh, fuck, busted. She's going to rat me out. How can I be that bad a student? We barely started. You right, know what yeah. I mean? Like,
I'm not even really in a grade yet.
I remember seeing her when I was 6 going, oh, here it comes. Awesome.
You tell me this is weirder. In high school, I had a Spanish teacher, both. Who lived across the street from school.
Oh,
and I would that's see where him, they're supposed to live.
I see him from my class occasionally, like going across the street to have lunch or get something or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm weird. Like, what is he doing?
Yeah, right. That's a little weird.
That's
yeah.
bizarre.
Yes. All right. So it turns out they're people too, well, and they can be homicidal.
So disappointing.
All right. We'll take a quick break. Gina's got news. You guys hang in, and we'll crack wise.
Cool.
Give me the news with crack. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden, Kamala. Meet news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
I put a bar underneath my swimming pool, too.
That was crazy.
As long as we're counting.
You're in the bar, and you look through like a portal into people swimming.
That's awesome. Hey, that's
fucking nuts.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you were just like on one, and no one could stop your ideas. You just had the money to finance these crazy dreams that you had, and you did them.
Well, if you do stuff, you go, what's so crazy about doing other stuff? I mean, what you get is you end up, not me, but you end up with like Elon Musk, you know? Like,
totally. Mm-hmm.
He's talking to some space guy in Russia, and the yeah. guy insults him. He's like, fuck that. I'll build my own rocket ship.
Right. I was going to say, you have a tunnel like to LAX from your one bedroom, you know, 10,000 square foot home.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there it is.
He probably has a tunnel here that goes yeah. to his house.
But the porthole on the right is into the swimming. There's three portholes on the right, goes right into the swimming pool.
That's under your swimming pool?
It's next to.
Oh, okay.
So you see the portholes
oh,
right there?
Oh, okay, I see.
Behind the bar? Yeah. People would swim past.
Kind of like a ship type thing.
He hired people
I
to
did
wear.
It.
Hired mermaids.
That one,
mermaid
that one I figured out. I mean, I engineered that one. Let's put it to you that way. People are a little That's worried about that one because, yeah. like, hey, if this pool, because the pool was in the ground.
Right.
Right.
And the ground helps keep the pool where it's at, you know?
Yeah.
I don't sound like Bill Cosby there.
I took away
the ground from one side of the pool, so it was unclear how strong it would be. And then I put windows in it, so it was unclear how strong it might be.
They have windows on airplanes and in submarines.
That was my argument.
Right, yeah.
That's right.
You've got to assume they know how to make them stronger.
Well, they do. Yeah.
They're the Navy.
I just did my own engineering.
Cut to, I still own the house.
Was that the same house?
Nobody will buy it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it still there now like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, still there. Yeah.
Whoever bought that had some fun.
Nobody refigured any of that. They were like, no, I'm going to park my car in the upstairs.
I
want people swimming past me.
When I sold it, I took the plug. I plugged in the hole and put a carpet, a rug over it, and just put the hoist down to the bottom. I didn't think
so. If anybody wanted to reactivate,
there's a Prius there now that pops up.
Yeah, probably would have been a liability.
Yeah.
But the plug I still have. That's at the other shop. It was a big... Yeah. Anyway.
It's important. Let's talk about Deshaun Watson, where he's at these days. The NFL has handed him his punishment for violating the league's personal conduct policy. The Cleveland Browns quarterback will have to serve a 6-game suspension for the sexual misconduct allegations made against him. 24 women filed lawsuits against him. 23 settled. One is holding out. Interestingly, this is fascinating. Watson's disciplinary hearing was presided over by an independent judge, Sue Robinson, who ruled that 6-game suspension was sufficient when the NFL had reportedly pushed for a 1-year suspension. How does that work?
I don't know how it works, but
I had read that she only was basing it on four cases of the 26.
Right, but just that the NFL would want a harsher.
They hired her to be independent, yeah. I guess.
Watson has denied any wrongdoing.
Sorry, I didn't interrupt you.
Yeah, and a Texas grand jury declined to pursue criminal charges. The league will allow Watson to participate in all training camp activities, still practice with the team.
What was the allegation? Was he sort of guide women
okay,
down to the hall?
I listened to a whole show about this. This is
I don't want to defend the man,
okay.
But if you have a big hog,
yeah,
and you're young, sure, and you're virile,
yeah,
and when a woman puts her hands on you, sometimes a little blood shifts,
sure,
fills messaged it up a little. Yeah. It's going to be hard for you to flip over without something going awry.
I hear you. Kickstand operation.
Is it not?
I hear you. But here's what I heard. Mm. I listened to like kind of a deep dive on this. Apparently, if you're a celebrated quarterback, you don't let that many people work on your body. Your mm-hmm. body is your machine. It is, you know, you only trust like a couple people. And he was like DMing girls on Instagram being like, can't you squeeze me in for a quick massage? And like, mm-hmm. come on. She'd be like, I'm busy. Oh, you got an hour for me. And so that's like his thing. That's like uh-huh. his fetish.
Yeah. But don't they just have rub and tugs for that?
Yeah, but part of what sounds like part of what gets him off is finding these random girls on Instagram.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's specific. Yeah. The rub and tug is not good because that's sort of agreed upon.
Yeah,
he
likes it when it catches him off guard. That's right. And unfortunately, just because, you know, it always has a thing, I listened to one of the full victim statements and I'm pretty sure Gloria Allred was sitting next to her. And at the very end, she says her name and then she says, and I'm a victim.
Mm. Well, Gloria's a boner killer. If you want to think about something, if you're ever getting rubbed down and you're getting a little hard and you got to flip over and you don't want to think about Vietnam or your grandparents having sex.
Think about that pantsuit.
Just think about Gloria Allred sitting next to a woman.
So
that'll kill it. That's a boner killer.
But he got a $230 million contract for 5 years, and I think it's guaranteed.
Yeah, he's going to lose like $300,000.
Yeah, it's nothing.
An absurd amount.
And not be concussed or injured for a month and a half.
Right. But he, when I listen to like his like press conferences and stuff, and of course everybody wants to ask about this and not football, he's like, I don't know what anyone's talking about. So he's either blacking out or like a total sociopath.
Well, or just in total denial.
Yeah.
The guy you don't hear about anymore with the rub and tug was Robert Kraft.
Oh, we're over it.
He weighed in on this. He said it's an embarrassment to our league.
Really?
So only
and I should
games.
Know.
Wow, he weighed in.
He weighed in. Ballsy.
Very.
I didn't think he'd weigh in.
Yeah, he'd probably want to stay quiet on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I agree.
So the other day, we were trying to figure out what was in this PACT Act that Jon Stewart's been talking about promoting, you know, to help veterans who were exposed to burn pits, and some Republicans were against it. We're like, what are they trying to sneak through that people are against? And it's still very unclear. But since then, both Senator Ted Cruz and Jon Stewart have been taken to Twitter to respond to that exact question. But there's still a lot of confusion.
There's $400 billion worth of stuff that's not for the stuff they're wanting to use.
They're going to explain it. You fill in any blanks as you know them.
First off, all roads lead through Logicville. You know what I mean? Like if someone goes, we should put some money aside for our veterans who are suffering next to these burn pits and getting cancer and everything. And then some Republican senator goes, not on my watch. You have to go, well, first off, what's in it for him? Right. That seems like the worst stance ever. Secondly, what the politicians do all the time is they go, I got a bill for the handicapped kids, the special needs kids, in order to be, I want their school buses retrofitted with seatbelts. And you go, okay, and like a new bridge in my district that I'm going to tack onto this. And then someone goes, hey, I'm not down with that. And then you go, oh, the kids.
Well, so you're against the kids.
Against the kids. I think that's might be what's happening.
Well, that's what I assumed. But
that's
if you hear Ted and John sort of, well, John Stewart going back and forth. This is, I just cut 80 seconds for you out of like a 5-minute video.
You can look it up, Chris. I think there's $400 billion worth of stuff.
They'll tell you.
What the dispute is about is the Democrats played a budgetary trick, which is they took $400 billion in discretionary spending and they shifted it to mandatory.
One thing, what Ted Cruz is describing is inaccurate, not true. Bullshit! This is no trick. Everything in the government is either mandatory or discretionary spending, depending on which bucket they feel like putting it in. The whole place is basically a fucking shell game. And he's pretending that this is some new thing that the Democrats pulled out, stuck into the bill, and snuck it past one Ted Cruz. Now, I'm not a big city Harvard-educated lawyer, but I can read. It's always been mandatory spending so that the government can't just cut off their funding at any point. No trick, no gimmick, been there the whole fucking time.
And so it's just part of the out-of-control spending from the left.
Nonsense. There is nothing in the bill that is not related to veterans spending. And don't take my word for it. An asshole on an iPhone. Read it. It's at congress.gov. This is for veterans who suffered health effects from being exposed to burn pits and other toxins. That is it.
Well, there's probably stuff for other veterans stuff in there. So it's burn pits and other things. Well, I don't know. Chris can look it up. We'll see.
But even optically, there. And I know we talk about this all the time, and they, you know, they can do sneaky things, but like, what, God forbid they're helping other veterans?
I agree.
What's the problem?
I'm just saying if you do 100% of it for the thing you say you're doing the bill for, then I don't know who's going to complain about that.
So
but we'll have to find out.
It remains confusing, at least on the surface.
I think ultimately it seems, at least to me in my professional life, that it's such a partisan game. It's like, oh, okay, well, if the Democrats want this, then as Republicans, we have to say no to it and we have to go against it and vice versa. It's so everybody's just against everybody, no matter what is in any bill at this point. I mean, when you hear some of the legislation on gun control and certain things like that, and people are saying, you know, disagreeing with things or shooting things down, and they're literally on partisan lines, like they're voting for things. It's like it's just a dead giveaway of what, to me, what is going on. I mean, I can't imagine why anybody would vote down some of the things that get voted.
I agree. I'm for the burn pit victims, but
controversial.
Seems weird. It just seems weird to take a stance against it unless there's something
veterans,
else going on.
Especially when you're a politician. I mean, that's...
Especially Republican politicians are supposed to be all about the veterans.
Right. Yeah.
And then I think we got to get Andrew Yang and his third party going.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I was just reading about that. That's pretty impressive.
I like that guy.
Yeah.
The Yang Gang.
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone is fucking furious. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but we might actually have to check in with him and get his thoughts, because he has been vocal as of late about not owning the rights to the Rocky franchise anymore, and now he's going after producer Erwin Winkler for developing a film spinoff featuring Ivan Drago. Did we know this?
Mm-mm.
This film is coming out?
No.
So Saturday, in what appears to now be a deleted tweet or an Instagram post, because I couldn't find it, and then the most current one says, now on to something happier, so I think he took that down. Stallone wrote, and here's a quote, another heartbreaker, just found this out. Once again, pathetic 94-year-old producer and his selfish, useless children are once again picking what is left off the bones of another wonderful character.
That's what I do.
How do you weasels look in the mirror?
How dare you?
And then he said, I'm sorry to the fans. I apologize to the fans. I never wanted Rocky to be exploited for this greed.
Oh,
hashtag
come on.
No shame. Hashtag sad day. Hashtag parasite. The movie's called Drago.
He's in a Lipton iced tea commercial as Rocky. Of course he wants Rocky to be exploited.
Drago will co-star Dolph Lundgren. And he was under the impression that Stallone was involved in the project or maybe acting in it, at least according to Lundgren. And later he wrote that he'd like to have at least a little of what's left of his rights back from the Rocky movies. Stallone would.
So he doesn't own the character?
Any rights at all?
I guess
he sold
the franchise, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, if you sell the franchise,
you're out at that point.
I get his, you know, his being upset about it, but it's like, get over it.
You know who does a good job of not putting themselves in there? For you? George Lucas. George Lucas has every right to be like, oh, this is not the Star Wars I thought of, or this is not the...
Right.
He sold it. He's happy.
Sold it. It's like, hey,
an island.
Yeah, you guys, good luck with it all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Well, if someone wants to drain that pool and fill it with fucking sand, I tell you, I got something to say about that shit.
Totally. You know how long I spent designing that
for
safety purposes?
Has anyone ever bought a house where the people had suggestions? Like, I have bought that house where, like the kids from the parents that died, you know, in Sherman Oaks are like, you're not going to change the color, are you?
Oh, really?
Like,
What do you care?
$687,000, bitch. I'll do whatever the fuck I want. I'll put pubes on the statue. How about that? Like, they're like, I would, you know, we grew up here. It's like, then don't fucking sell it.
I bought an office building in Burbank like 7 years ago. And the couple that owned
it
before me.
Rich guy talk with Brian Austin. Yeah, totally.
So I was eating lobster in my car and I was like, let me buy a building.
I'm from the Lamborghini, my swimming pool.
I want a building.
That's odd because I'm looking for a building.
And the owners of the building, they were like really, they loved the sign that they had put outside. Yeah. And they were like, well, you're not going to take the sign down, are you? I was like, not the
Schmidt,
business.
Schmidt and Sons Brewery? Yeah, I'm not doing that.
I'm absolutely taking it. As a matter of fact, here you go. And I like ripped it off the wall and handed it to him.
It's a muffler shop or what?
No, it was like a contractor.
I bought a car from a guy, and he's like, you're not going to paint it, are you? I swear to God. And I was like,
Right. I'm actually going to strip it down. I have big dreams for this car.
Buying it for parts.
But it's like, honestly, it's weird to have notions when you're selling something.
Right.
Used to be a sitcom thing all the time where the Bradys were going to sell their house, and then the couple would come in and go, oh, no. We're going to do away with that.
Put up a wall here. Right.
That's the girl's bedroom. Yeah, I'm going to take this wall, blow it all out. They would all get, where's Mrs. Beasley going to live? You know, they come in and get all sad and morose and weird.
This is actually, now that I think about it, this is the plot to Beetlejuice.
Yeah, I was just going to say Beetlejuice.
My thing is like, here's the asking price. Give it to me. Shoot all the gay porn you want. I don't care.
You are in the San Fernando Valley.
Yes.
Swash Lamborghini.
That's right. Have all your white supremacist meetings here and in between shoot your gay porn and just cut that check.
All right, yeah. As long as your check clears. Yeah.
That's right. So the Britney Spears tell-all book is finished.
Ooh.
But Simon & Schuster, and you know, they signed Britney to this $15 million deal for this post-conservatorship autobiography. But the release may be delayed, and not for any reason you could possibly imagine. She delivered her draft recounting the horrors of the conservatorship and the cruelty of her family members, as well as the highlights of her career from child star to the, you know, princess of pop, essentially. Her team hopes to release Britney's book next January. However, Publishers Weekly indicates that there's a nationwide paper shortage of physically printing the book. So like all these other supply chain issues.
Everyone's suffering.
There's not enough paper to pour the books on.
That's a Kindle crowd, her crowd.
She'll probably do an audiobook.
Oh, yeah. What would that sound that would like, be Brittany?
So here's the thing.
I hope that never does.
I love Sam. Sam loves me. And I had no idea who was coming to my wedding. Was that really Madonna?
You guys danced. I saw it on TMZ.
I can't believe that the material girl, Madge herself, showed up to my wedding. I did not invite Jason Alexander, by the way.
That wasn't him.
She should release a song in between each chapter.
That would be great. Well, she's doing a remix of Tiny Dancer with Elton John. Maybe she'll put that in there.
Perfect.
Yeah. There you go.
I was thinking about how many, we were talking about Michelle Obama's book selling 17 million copies. The advance on the next one's got to be millions and millions. This got chicks read books. They're going to love this book.
Boy.
This is all
poolside reading.
I mean, do you think she got a $10 million advance?
It's a $15 million deal.
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah. Sorry, I didn't hear it. So it's more.
But it's weird because, you know, like there's a lot of weird stuff on, you know, Instagram with her. And she's already, spilling chapters of the book on there. Just, I don't think she means to. I think she's just got shit to say and she doesn't want to wait to say it.
My audiobook's out today, by the way.
Right.
People want a book. A guy was compensated considerably less.
It's an audiobook. Adam reads it about Britney Spears' life.
That's right.
Right, yeah.
A son B.
Do you remember a couple, maybe it was a couple weeks ago, last month, when Lizzo had to change a song that she had just released?
That's right.
And I couldn't figure out what the word is because no one would print it. It was asterisk. It was the word spaz.
Spaz.
So
it had to be taken out. Well, guess what? They are coming for the other queen of music, Beyonce.
Mm.
She's had some backlash from a group who felt the lyric on her album was also ableist and offensive. So she's cutting it. TMZ reports that the song Heated on her new album, Renaissance, features the line, Brian. Will somebody go ahead and talk over me?
Go.
No.
Spazzing on that ass. Ugh.
That was so good.
Spaz.
I'm so glad I didn't interrupt that read.
I'm not hear that again.
Could you repeat that? I feel like I missed the second half.
Spaz is
the first half was spaz on that ass, right? But I didn't hear the second.
Yeah, like seizures. Is that what we're worried about?
I don't know. I feel like maybe we're holding the ladies to a slightly different standard because I drive around with my daughter. She pops in Kanye West. I hear 2,000 N-words in the span of like one city block.
Yeah.
No problema.
Let's I thought that was the worst. WAP now.
I thought it was the worst word we could ever say was mm-hmm. that. And it's like, it's a pass.
It's the worst word you can say.
Now
I mean, there were songs in like the mid-2000s that were the lyrics were horrendous.
Right.
That just seems like a joke to me. That
lest we not forget the famous line from Shoop, mm-hmm. Salt and Peppa,
mm-hmm.
That I don't think gets any radio play on any 90s hip-hop station anymore.
Yeah.
When he says something got me sounding like a retard.
Oh,
right.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there's all the
they just edit that out.
Yeah.
Bitches ain't shit, but hoes and tricks.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
you know what? Beat That Pussy Up is still one of my all-time favorites. You know, lyrically, it's like that to me is the world we should be living in.
What's your favorite lyric in that?
Probably that one. Oh, okay. I think that's the only one. It just repeats over and over again.
Yeah. Now we're getting granular with spaz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? No one says anymore. Doy.
Oh, yeah, no doy. Duh.
People would spaz and move their hand.
Don't do
that's
the
offensive.
Hand.
Can't do the hand move
that's
or
bad.
The door.
Yeah.
I want to raise my kids in a country where they can't spaz
with
out
no
and do doy.
You know who agrees with you? Remember the last very famous public figure to do that?
Trump.
Yep.
Yeah, he did the spaz.
Yeah, he sure did.
Yeah. That didn't work out too well for me.
Kicking it old school, though. That's it. Doy, spaz. I had friends that would almost crack their own ribs, hitting themselves so hard in
that's
their
no
kid. That was the whole thing. What are my kids going to say to people? You're incorrect. Like, you got to say.
Our dad
word,
is not politically
the
correct.
Simple just repeating in a dumb voice.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
say
is that what you mean? Yeah. Like, oh, I think we should offer ice cream. Oh, we should offer ice cream.
Okay.
Was doy what you said over like the super obvious? Like sometimes you'd go, you ever see the Rams football helmet? You know the circle? That's a Rams horn.
Yeah, no, doy.
Doy. Yeah, that meant you knew it before they did.
Totally. Right.
I think that's over.
Being on the losing end of a doy was pretty goddamn painful.
On the losing end.
Hey, there's winners and losers in the doys. Right. The guy giving the doy, he's in the catbird seat. You're on the business end of the doy? You are fucked up.
Oh, you've messed up, Roy.
Of the doy wars.
And you can also get multiple doys coming at you, dude, with like three or four guys chiming in. Like a barbershop doy.
Yeah.
Quartet.
Ghost Adventures has a whole like episode of like the battlefield where the doys took place. And, you know, it's like.
Oh, yeah. And it's almost in slow motion. Like once you go, you know, the Rams helmet has the. And you see the hands start to move up. And you're like, everyone knew it before me. Here comes another guy. He's walking by. Hands coming up. He's joining. It's collateral doy damage. Everyone's joining the doy boy band.
Jesus Christ.
There's not enough shame going around anymore.
No, there's
anymore.
Very little.
Anyway, what was the story?
This podcast is really gone off the rails.
What is the new doy now? Like,
yeah, what is your
no? Let's not talk
saying.
About the new doy.
We
come on,
coasted.
Let's move on.
We coasted with duh.
Yeah, duh? No duh.
Wow, okay. But duh was just sort of a watered down doy. Yeah.
Well, remember the glory days of As If or Not?
Yeah.
Not was so much fun.
I remember when I was a kid, Scratch was the big one.
Oh, Scratch!
What does that mean?
Ooh, Scratch! Like when somebody would say something to you that seemed like a burn and something like, ooh, Scratch.
Ooh,
I never got on the not. I never got on the not.
You were too old.
Bandwagon.
When Wayne's World came out.
You do this when you cry, but you're not. Yeah.
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 Totally.
Yeah.
All right. Let's bring it home.
I think it's
not
best.
One more.
Okay, I'm gonna bring it home.
All right.
Because I don't know if you're kidding.
Not
okay. Scratch.
I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. What's that taste like?
Gina. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Wait, yeah, the dur was the doy.
Durr.
The dur was the watered down doy.
Yeah, no duh.
Oh, duh, yeah. Then there was a dur.
Yeah.
All these sounds are now, have been
gone
weaponized.
Away with the dodo.
Gone the way of the doy doy.
Thanks for coming
there's
in,
there's a lot of pun-related doy stuff we could hit here. All right, you can go to adamcarolla.com. Wise Guys Comedy Club coming up August 26th and 27th. Got four shows there. The book, the audio book is out now, and you can get the hardback as well.
This
and
one? This one,
this
Adam?
Book.
Everything.
Brian, everything reminds me of something.
Perfect.
Brian Austin Green, Nick Leisure, the movie, Last the Night, available on VOD and as we speak. Thanks, guys. This is fun.
Dude, thank you so much for having us.
So, till next time, Adam Carolla for Brian and Nick and Gina and Bald and Ace saying, mahalo. Tits, tits, and more tits.
Pick up your copy of Everything Reminds Me of Something, Adam Carolla's 6-book audiobook available today. Get it at adamcarolla.com. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And get tickets to see the Ace Man at adamcarolla.com.
You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.